我是樊东林，祝各位平安。
国会通过基建法案，拜登称其为里程碑。美国自周一起将对接种了新冠疫苗的国际旅客开放。台湾国防部长邱国正投书《华尔街日报》，称台湾不会对中国投降。大家好，欢迎收看《美国观察》，我是平章。台湾国防部长邱国正近日投书《华尔街日报》，称台湾不会向中国投降。台湾为抵抗可能的解放军犯台做出了哪些准备？我们在稍后的节目当中带您关注。《美国观察》的节目热线已经开通，欢迎您拨打00212029204990给我们留言，跟我们分享您对节目的看法，也告诉我们您希望看到的节目内容。首先来关注今天的新闻。11月5日晚上，国会众议院以228票对206票通过了总价值10000多亿美元的基础建设投资与工作法案，将改善美国的公路、网络宽带和其他基础设施。法案将送交白宫，等候拜登总统签署。拜登总统星期六上午在白宫召开记者会，说这项法案将为美国人创造工作，并让美国有能力与中国竞争。
The House of Representatives passed an Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. That's a fancy way of saying a bipartisan infrastructure bill. A once-in-a-generation investment that's going to create millions of jobs, modernize our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our broadband, a whole range of things, to turn the climate crisis into an opportunity. And it puts us on a path to win the economic competition of the 21st century that we face with China and other large countries and the rest of the world.
另一项拜登总统想要通过的法案是 1.75 万亿美元的重建美好计划。该计划旨在全面的扩大社会安全网和应对气候变化。这项法案因为民主党内温和派的反对，已经比原本的构想缩水了将近一半，但目前仍未获得通过。在星期六上午的记者会上，拜登总统说他对于这项法案接下来在国会两院获得通过保持乐观。两架武装无人机星期天攻击了伊拉克总理埃尔卡西米的住所。埃尔卡西米之后在推特上表示自己没有受伤，并呼吁各方保持冷静和克制。根据美联社的报道，七名总理官邸的安全人员受伤。拜登总统在星期天上午发出声明，强烈谴责了针对伊拉克总理的恐怖袭击，也呼吁各方冷静克制，并通过对话来保障伊拉克国家体制，并增强伊拉克人民应得的民主。拜登说恐怖袭击者必须被绳之以法，他还谴责了想要破坏伊拉克民主进程的任何暴力行为。拜登已经指示美国国安团队对伊拉克安全部队提供必要的协助，并调查恐怖袭击者。声明强调，在伊拉克政府跟人民努力坚守伊拉克主权与独立之际，美国与他们坚定地站在一起。从星期一开始，对中国、印度、巴西、南非、英国和欧洲大部分地区的旅行禁令就将结束。美国将允许国际旅客入境，但他们必须提供疫苗接种记录和新冠检测阴性证明，只有少数的情况例外，比如两岁以下的婴儿或是一些紧急人道状况。美国认可世界卫生组织批准紧急使用的任何新冠疫苗，包括在美国使用的辉瑞、莫德纳和强生疫苗，以及在海外使用最多的疫苗，如阿斯利康和中国的科兴疫苗。世卫组织正在审查俄罗斯疫苗，但尚未批准。美国还为接种疫苗的人重新开放与加拿大和墨西哥的陆地边境，因为从加拿大和墨西哥到美国的人大多数旅行都是通过陆路而不是空中。美国将于12月召开有100多个国家参与的民主峰会，帮助遏制全球范围内的民主倒退以及对权力和自由的侵蚀。 路透社报道说，定于12月9日至10日举行的民主峰会将考验拜登总统在今年2月发表首次外交政策讲话时做出的承诺。其他任内，美国将重返全球领导地位，对抗中国和俄罗斯领导的独裁势力。不过报道说，权力活动人士质疑这次视频峰会能否推动受邀与会的领导人采取有意义的行动，而其中一些领导人被指责有独裁倾向。美国官员表示，这次的峰会只是一个就民主进行更长期对话的开端，参与国家需要实现他们做出的改革承诺，这样才能够受邀参加计划明年举行的后续峰会。报道说，美国在亚洲的一些盟友受到了邀请，像日本和韩国，但是泰国和越南则没有受邀。国防部长邱国正11月4日在华尔街日报上发表了一篇题为台湾不会向中国投降的文章，誓言台湾军队有决心和能力克服来自中国的挑战。邱国正的文章释放出哪些信息？台湾究竟在因应北京可能的武力进攻方面做出了哪些准备？我们现在就连线美国之音驻台北特约记者顾展龙。展龙你好。
锦章你好。那主持人刚是您先说。
展龙先来给我们介绍一下这个台湾国防部长邱国正在华尔街日报上发表的这篇文章具体都说了些什么。
主持人其实刚刚说的没有错，那其实这一次的台湾国防部长的投书，那态度其实是非常强硬的。那邱国正呢，在一开头的时候他就点出了，那台湾会引发全球关注的主因就是中国不断扩大印太地区的军力，那解放军在东海和南海的活动令人感到不安，而且中方呢是透过台海周围的灰色地带来侵扰台湾。那他表明说自己是中华民国，也就是台湾的捍卫者，那也是抵抗解放军威胁经验非常丰富的士兵。那他说他在1996年台湾海峡飞弹危机的时候，他当时就担任师指挥部的主任，但他是说呢，他从40年前参军以来，现在的局势呢其实比之前来说是最具挑战的时刻，因为中国呢从未放弃并吞台湾的野心。那邱国正又继续说，他其实在准备反击中国等等一切可能的对策已经成为台湾国军日常的军事行动。那他强调说，他知道和平没有办法被保证会永远持续，那残酷的现实是呢，台湾在资源、人力和军事技术上都没有办法与中国来抗衡。那这场战争对台湾来说等于是与巨人之间的战斗，那台湾该怎么做呢？那邱国正说，中国是希望能够迅速的拿下台湾，不让第三方是有机会来介入。那国军正在制定对策，利用台海的天然屏障来制造一个缓冲区，进行非对称的防御战略。那台湾呢，也增加国防支出，建立机动、远程跟精确打击的能力。那目前也正在开发的武器系统，将有助于台湾建构多层次、多领域的军力。那邱国正呢，是以国防部长的角度来说，说台湾自2012年实行这个募兵制以来，那军队呢的那个运作的转型精英化，这批军人呢能操作复杂的武器系统，定期展开作战演习，加强台湾战力。另外也将在2022年元旦成立一个全民防卫动员署，那透过规划还有演练，让后备部队能够支持战事，那主要就是增强台湾整体的防御能力。那邱国正呢也在投书的最后是说到，台湾国军是知道和平是靠争取来的，那他表明台湾是有决心的。那他再次强调呢，台湾不会向中国来投降，而是秉持着地区和平和安全的理念，为中华民国的生存与繁荣和为台湾全体人民的安全和福祉而战。那这就是他投书的所有内容。
展龙，就像你刚刚所介绍的，邱国正在这篇文章当中是提到了一些防御战略，那实际的情况如何？台湾方面近来是为应对可能的解放军武力进攻做出了哪些部署和准备？
这个方面呢，其实呢，从蔡英文总统上台以来，做的是蛮多的努力的。那首先，台湾在2019年到2020年之间呢，其实在军购的费用上就高达了5000亿新台币。那在去年的时候呢，当时美国在台协会的台北办事处处长林英杰也表示，台湾年度的军购额度其实就高达118亿美元，就是3200多亿的新台币，是全世界公认美国武器的最大一个买家。那其实最近呢，台湾的空军将在11月18号的空军嘉义基地举行蔡英文总统主持的 F-16V 战机性能提升接装典礼。那根据了解呢，这个首批接装的 F-16V 大约有60架左右。那其实现在台湾的空军呢，现役有141架的 F-16 战机，耗资1100亿元的新台币，由美国的洛克希德马丁公司和台湾的汉翔公司来将原本的141架 F-16AB 战机升级为 F-16B 战机。那另外还有呢，66架全新的 F-16V 战机，这是还没有交机的部分。那要是交机之后呢，台湾的 F-16B 战机将会高达207架，那会成为全球拥有最多 F-16 战机的国家。那提到这个 F-16 战机呢，有什么特点哦？重要的是它可以是看得更远，打得更远，那加上隐形的，就是搭配隐形的涂料。那新的雷达和新的武器系统呢，性能也提升了一代，成为4.5代。那就是战机，就是四代半的战机啊。那台湾升级的 F-16B 战机呢，已经能担负起战备任务，形成就是很快速的形成战力。那不过新买的这个，刚刚提到新买的66架的 F-16B 战机啊，其实原本首批是预定2架会在2023年交机，那在2026年的时候呢，才会全数交机完成。不过目前大家也知道，在台海的情势越来越紧张的一个状况之下哦，那共机有大量密集的侵扰台湾的防空识别区西南和东南空域。那所以一来，台湾其实加速了对原本 F-16 战机的性能提升，那二来呢，也进一步的争取提前这个交机的时间。那至少首批呢会在2022年的时候交机，而且也希望呢，这个交机的数量能够再提高。那这是飞机的部分。那台湾的陆军装甲部队其实也拥有了460辆的 M60A3 战车，那会在2022年进行装备和系统的一个更新。不过话说回来，这些都只是准备啊。那台湾的行政院长苏贞昌也说，中国不断的军机扰台，那我们只能努力备战。但其实是不求战的。
其实我们看到台湾方面在努力提升自己的军力，而且还有美国的支持。但是不容忽视的是，中国近些年来它的这个军力的提升啊，像我们看到五角大楼最近也是公布了最新的一份的这个中国军力报告。那么台湾各界如何来看待中国和台湾之间的这种军力的对比？台湾方面觉得自己的国防足以应对吗？
其实主持人提到说这个美国公布的中国军力报告，那其实根据这个报告，我之前有读到，其实中国的核扩张的快，就是速度加快，可能会在2027年就拥有700多枚可交付使用的核弹头，然后在2030年的时候呢，会拥有至少1000枚的核弹头，还包括化学和生物的研究。那这当然是非常非常厉害的军力。那另外呢，这个报告也是指出哦，在2020年的时候，中国对台湾的外交、政治和军事的施压加剧。那不仅在台湾海峡进行，就像刚刚之前一直讲的，就类似岛屿侵占的行动演习，那也多次的侵扰台湾防空的识别区。那目标也是在2027年的时候，能具备在印太地区和美军对抗的一个能力。那并迫使台湾的领导层依照北京的条件来进行谈判，那这就是一直是中共的目标。 那武器这么强，台湾应该要怎么因应呢？那其实照刚刚之前的说下来哦，那台湾其实真的没有办法去那个对抗中共，因为很明显这个是小虾米对抗大鲸鱼嘛。那先前也有说过，这个说如果解放军来攻台的话，那国军第一批的死伤恐怕会高达24万人，这是之前一直在传说的。那台湾能做的其实只有守备。那根据了解的话，台湾的海军陆战队还派了40名的兵力前往关岛的这个美军新建基地，接受为期1个月的台美陆后两栖登陆作战的训练，来强化台湾海军陆战队两栖突击和城镇的作战能力。那还会与美军的陆战队来进行一个协同作战。那这部分呢，台湾的国防部长邱国正他也是证实了。那这其实就是大家一直所说的驻台，就是美军驻台，其实就是在说这个部分。那台美呢，从今年是开始实施了这个特战合作的协训计划，那由具备这个各类军事专长的美军特战小组官兵，然后由少校和中校军官领队，然后每半年的一个梯次来接替来进驻台湾，来协助这个台湾特战部队来提升战力，那也就形成了这个美军在台的小型常驻部队。但其实这些部队呢，无论如何这些都是防守，那为了在维持这个台海和平所做出的一个防备，并非中共所说的挑衅。那因为这些在中共我们在中共解放军的步步进逼下呢，台湾也只能以这样的方式来守住底线。
是，好的，谢谢美国之音驻台北特约记者顾展龙带来的连线报道。我们继续来聚焦台湾问题。随着台海紧张局势的升级，马上可能获得第三个五年任期的习近平会如何处理台湾问题？战争是否一触即发？美国会在多大的程度上支持台湾？华盛顿智库德国马歇尔基金会中国项目主任葛莱仪分享了他的看法。
So thank you, Ms. Glaser, for taking our interview. And first, I want to start with asking your thoughts on Xi Jinping's recent speech where he mentioned a peaceful reunification with Taiwan. Because previously in his other speeches, he mentioned that the Taiwan issue could not be passed on from generation to generation. And he said, like, any attempts that stands in the way will be smashed. So what do you make of his recent speech? And do you think his Taiwan policy has changed?
So I don't think that Xi Jinping's policy has changed. This is not the first time that Xi Jinping has said that there should be peaceful reunification. In fact, if you read all of the statements and speeches that Xi Jinping has made, they've been fairly consistent. There has been some indication of impatience, such as his statements that the Taiwan problem should not be passed down from generation to generation. He has now said that twice since coming to power. But he inherited the policy guideline from Hu Jintao of peaceful development across the Taiwan Strait. And in his January 2019 speech, he reaffirmed that. So ultimately, Xi Jinping's policy is one of preferring to achieve unification peacefully,while, of course, not ruling out use of force, and not ruling out coercive measures either. So I actually see Xi Jinping's statements as quite consistent. He continues to say that this is a historical inevitability, that Taiwan must return to the control of the motherland. He doesn't rule out use of force.And he continues to say peaceful unification is the goal.
But despite of him reiterating the word peaceful, there's increasingly more Chinese military jets flying over the Taiwan Strait. And the speculation of a war breaking out is also increasing. Do you think a war is likely to break out?
Well, again, I don't think that Xi Jinping has ruled out use of force, and I think that everybody should not rule out the possibility of a Chinese attack on Taiwan. That said, I do not think that such an attack is likely, and the policies pursued by Taiwan and by the United States will affect Xi Jinping's decision making. Also, the policies of other countries who express concern about what is happening in the Taiwan Strait, China's military coercion against Taiwan in particular. In my view, the potential for war is not very high. The operations taking place in Taiwan's air defense identification zone are intended to bully and intimidate Taiwan. They are intended to stress the pilots in Taiwan and maintenance crews and to test Taiwan's defenses overall, and to warn Taiwan and the United States not to go too far to cross Chinese red lines. They're also intended to train PLA pilots. And Xi Jinping, indeed, has called for more realistic training. But I don't think that an increase in the number of aircraft in Taiwan's air defense identification zone is a signal that China is about to attack Taiwan.
So what do you think is China's calculation now? What is stopping them from an invasion?
Well, first of all, as I said, China's interests are best served by convincing Taiwan that there is a better life for the people in integrating with a rising China. The goal of Xi Jinping, I think, is to induce a sense of psychological despair in the minds of Taiwanese people that they only really have a bright future if they join with the motherland. So this is part of psychological warfare that has been going on against Taiwan for many, many years. But I would also say that if Xi Jinping is to contemplate use of force, he has to think about what the risks are for him. And the risks begin with a failed invasion. And I think that could have a negative impact on the legitimacy of the Chinese Communist Party and also perhaps of Xi Jinping's position in particular. And I also think that it would have a potentially negative impact on Xi Jinping globally. Having used force against Taiwan, really the first, it would be the first major use of force by China since 1979. And I think other countries would fear that Beijing is now emboldened to use force to solve other problems. There's also the risk of a major war with the United States. I think that the PLA assumes that the U.S. military would get involved in such a war to defend Taiwan. And therefore, if China were to go to war with the United States, there is the potential for escalation to nuclear weapons, a much wider war that may not be limited just to the Taiwan Strait. And it, of course, would then pose questions about whether Xi Jinping would be able to achieve all the other objectives that he has set out for China for 2035 and 2049, including the attainment of the Chinese dream of national rejuvenation. After all, if they end up in a major war with the United States, I think that would just undermine Xi Jinping's other objectives. So it's very noteworthy that when Xi Jinping made a speech just a couple of weeks ago to mark the 110th anniversary of the Xinhai Revolution in 1911, he said China needs a stable domestic and international environment for national rejuvenation. And I think that that is an important statement. And so I think that at least for the next few years, the United States and Taiwan have a window to strengthen the measures that they are taking to continue to deter a Chinese attack on Taiwan.
Now, how do you evaluate Biden's Taiwan policy? Because against this backdrop of a more competitive China and a more tense U.S.-China relationship, do you think this strategic ambiguity is still valid?
Well, strategic ambiguity only refers to the question of whether or not the United States would come to the defense of Taiwan. And I believe that it is still valid. The White House continues to say that that is U.S. policy. There are risks to moving toward a position of strategic clarity, of saying, regardless of the circumstances, the United States will come to Taiwan's defense. And one of those risks is that Beijing could conclude that the United States has essentially violated the terms of normalization that took place in 1979, which included ending the mutual defense treaty with Taiwan, under which the United States did have an obligation to come to Taiwan's defense. And if Xi Jinping is backed into a corner, I would say this is particularly relevant in the run-up to the 20th Party Congress, where a year from now he will get a third five-year term in office. Xi Jinping could be compelled, really forced, to use force against Taiwan, because otherwise he might be seen as weak and not defending his country's territorial integrity and sovereignty. So I think already we have heard senior Biden administration officials say that there are inherent risks in changing the policy of strategic ambiguity, and I don't expect it will happen in this administration.
Okay. As you mentioned previously, that it is not to China's interest, and they would avoid a war because the U.S. force might get involved. But do you think it's to U.S. interest to get involved in this war to defend Taiwan? Do you think the Biden administration would defend Taiwan if the war was going to break out?
Well, I personally believe that Taiwan matters greatly to the United States. It is a vibrant democracy of 23.5 million people. We have, of course, a long, close history with the people of Taiwan. Taiwan stands as an alternative model to the People's Republic of China, to show that that governance, a very high quality system of governance, can be led by people with ethnic Chinese backgrounds. Often the Chinese say that they are a better democracy, but I think that in fact Taiwan is. But I would also make the point that President Biden himself, in speaking at a town hall just a few days ago, when asked if he would defend Taiwan, said yes. He later said that the United States actually has a commitment to come to Taiwan's defense. And that is not completely accurate, since the Taiwan Relations Act does not compel the United States to come to Taiwan's defense. But I think that it tells us something about President Biden's own personal feelings about this issue. And I think he feels very strongly that we must deter an attack from China on Taiwan.
Very well. So my last question is about Xi Jinping and China's sixth plenum. So 5 years ago, when Xi Jinping took power, you made some comments on him. You mentioned that Xi was an exceptionally strong leader, and you said that China would be more assertive in defending its own interests in the world. Now that 5 years have passed, do you have any updates to add?
Well, I think we have seen a pattern of growing assertiveness and even aggression in Chinese foreign policy. And this is particularly true, of course, on territorial disputes. We have seen China use small-scale use of force on the Indian border, for example, and where about, I think, 20 or so Indians lost their lives. We have seen China double down on the use of coercion with its paramilitary forces in the South China Sea, for example. And then we've seen the emergence of wolf warrior diplomacy in China over the last few years, particularly as the world has tried to investigate the origins of the COVID-19 virus. And I think this has been viewed by Beijing as threatening to the legitimacy of Chinese Communist Party rule in China. So I think that in the coming year, we may see a bit of a tactical shift in Chinese foreign policies in the run-up to the 20th Party Congress. But my own expectation is that after Xi Jinping gets his third five-year term in office, that we are likely to see even greater Chinese assertiveness and coercion against other countries, against its neighbors, but also against countries in Europe, where we've seen greater willingness to put some pressure on them, and also, of course, tension with the United States. So I think that this trend line is going to continue going forward.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Glaser, for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you.
好，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，再见。